And now let me tell you, the speaker, we have also imported her from the Reader, actually.
From the Reader.
You like that?
Imported from the Reader.
Okay. We imported her from the Reader, and this is Barbara, and she's just committed to working for God for the rest of her life. And I think she'll have a lot of nice thoughts to share with us tonight. It's our Barbara.
Yay! Oh, you know, it's a couple of tough acts to follow. First this one, and then that one, you know? It's like, I'm blazing. I'm turning on some... I did this at home last night with my kitchen lights. I must have some electrical charge. Okay.
Is it plugged in?
Yeah.
Let me try.
I saw the light. There we go. Okay. Well, I have a great topic that's close to everybody's heart tonight. How many of you would like more money in your wallet? Raise your hand. Is there anybody who doesn't want more money in their wallet? Okay, there's a few. Okay. Well, most of us would be fine with there being a little more money in our wallet, right? And certainly the city of San Diego could use some more money. Yeah, and the state of California, we need some more money. And we, you know, our political leaders are real good at spending money, and all these propositions that were voted down, you know, cost us $300 million. You know, Sandy works with me at the Reader, and those of us who work in the media, the television stations, the newspapers, they all benefited from these political campaigns that spent a lot of money, but the rest of us, you know, that was $300 million wasted. Anyway, most of us could use more money, and I got great news. It's just so amazing what you find in the news, working for a newspaper again, but this wasn't in my newspaper. This was a study that was written about 2 weeks ago, and an economics professor at MIT, which we all know is a very learned institution of higher education, they did a study, and they discovered that if you double the frequency of attendance at church, your household income will go up 9.1%. Is that amazing? So all of you who come at Wednesday night need to come to Sunday morning too, and you're going to go up 9.1%. That's what it says here in this study.
That actually would be 18.2% because you're going twice a week.
Well, and if you bring a spouse, then you got, you know, the exponential, you're going to be rolling in dough, you know? That's what the study says. Well, they didn't, in the little news article, explain it completely, but his hypothesis is that those who have faith are less stressed out about daily life, which allows them to be successful in the labor force and also successful in marriage. Well, you all know I'm at church a lot. And I... So the marriage thing, he needs to interview me. But anyway, I will say in the 15-some years that I've been coming steadily to Wednesday night and Sunday morning church, my income has gone up, and I am truly grateful. But now that you know that this economist at MIT says your income can go up if you sit here every Wednesday night, is that a good reason to come? No. Money, we all need it, but it shouldn't be the reason we're here. The reason we're here is to create this wonderful, exuberant, joyous family that supports one another when we're down or going through whatever challenges. But, you know, we are in these physical bodies, and we do need material things. And I did some research in the Bible and found lots of wonderful verses that pertain to this talk. And in Proverbs it says, God will often bless people materially who give first to him. So, you know, that fits right in with this study. You go to church, you help praise God and build that community of worship and support, you will be rewarded materially. But, you know, the study, it falls under the social sciences. I used to be in graduate school. I was a political scientist, you know. The social sciences aren't real science. So I wouldn't, you know, don't put stock in any of the social science stuff. But I'm wondering, what happens to this study if you stop going to church after 6 months? Does your income fall? Who knows? Well, and if you go, as Reese suggested, even more times, if you join the choir, will it go up beyond that 9.1%? Shane will help praise you, and, you know, you'll... Anyway, so I have problems with this study. And I also have problems with wanting too much money, because we all do need it. And I will confess today, you know, as imperfect as I am, and as I was writing this talk on paper and in my mind for the last week, I was faced with a dilemma at work today. Some coworker of mine was getting employees to kick in $10 each for the lotto tonight. Was I going to kick in my 10 bucks and quit my job tomorrow with all the other Reader employees? Well, you know what? I didn't want to be the only one still working there tomorrow. That's the only reason I felt like I needed to do it. You know, it's like, what? Boy, won't I look stupid if I didn't take this free ticket out of here. I mean, well, it's a $10 ticket to paradise financially, but, you know, that was the, I don't want to win the lotto. I mean, if it happened, like, Mel, if it happened to Millie, she'd be grateful. We would deal with the stress of it. We'd handle it. But I didn't wake up this morning saying I want to win the lotto. But you know what? I went and I turned my $10 in. You know, I'm not proud of that. But y'all can hit me up for a loan tomorrow. So we all need money. We need money. But you know, in Ecclesiastes it says, whoever loves money, you never have enough of it. And whoever loves wealth is never satisfied. Now, I've had the opportunity to know some very, very wealthy people. I've dated a few millionaires, and that's why I'm still single. But, no, there's so many other reasons. But let me tell you a couple of stories about people who are very, very wealthy. The first one is a friend of mine from childhood, going back eons, and her mom was a dear friend of my mother's, and her mom is 91 and lives in Santa Rosa, north of San Francisco, and she's been having some health problems. So her daughter Jan, who is my age, flew her mom to Los Angeles last week to see some specialists in Los Angeles. Well, Jan and I were never really close. We were oil and water as kids, and we still don't have much in common. But when Jan flew her mother down from Santa Rosa, it was in a private jet owned by Jan's husband. And Betty is now staying in a 20,000 square foot mansion in Beverly Hills for a week with its own limousine and two maids a day. And I can go on and on and on about the excess of her daughter's acquired life through marrying this attorney who is reviled, hated in Los Angeles for some of his things he gets away with as an attorney, that legally he always finds the loopholes, but morally you really wouldn't want to spend time with him. And to compound this little story further, Jan, the daughter who married this man, found out at a company Christmas party 3 years ago by his law partners that the law firm was being sued for sexual harassment because he had harassed many women in the firm. And, oh, by the way, Jan, again, this is at the company Christmas party, did you know your husband's cheating on you with three other women? And, of course, this woman was devastated, and she tried to divorce him, and in the end, she couldn't walk away from the money. Isn't that sad? So she has, as her mom and I were talking, I went up there Saturday night, Jan wasn't around because they had to fly on the private jet to Aspen where they're building a new $8 million house, and they needed to pick out some things for the house. So I drove up to Beverly Hills, stepped into the castle and said, wow, she's got all the trappings and she is trapped. She cannot walk away from this money. And isn't that sad? And I drove home a few hours later down the freeway and I drove up to my little house and I felt so rich. I felt so blessed knowing I could go to church Sunday morning and see my spiritual family and know that some of us can't put something in the offering every week. Some of us can just give smiles, and that is absolutely okay. We who can laugh together here and can help each other out, my friend Sandy loaned me this top. Isn't it cute? Well, no, she gave it to me, so that's even better. She gave it to me. Not because I didn't have any clothes in the closet, but boy, I love a spontaneous gift. You know, that was given freely without expectation. The other example of people loving money I want to give. About 8 years ago, I was dating someone who was not a millionaire, but was doing quite well. And he worked three jobs and suggested that my one job wasn't enough. Now, I at the time, most of you know I lost a brother to brain cancer about that time, and I'm very sad about that, but I'm so grateful if I had to go through that, that it happened at the time I was dating this person, because I realized as my brother was dying at age 37, there's no guarantees. This person I was dating would say, let's both work two or three jobs, and when we're 50, we'll retire and live the good life. You know what? I want to live the good life now. There's no guarantees you're not going to die tonight, tomorrow. We can't postpone having that balance in our lives. Let me find this wonderful verse. In Proverbs 23, verses 4 and 5, it says, do not wear yourself out to get rich. Have the wisdom to show restraint. Hey, I'm getting wise on that one. I want to live now. I feel like I'm rich because I don't have a second job on the weekends. And yes, I earn enough money through Friday that I can meet my bills. But the real lesson I learned from my brother was live today. And certainly don't think that acquiring money and goods and stockpiling them up is going to mean that the second half of your life is going to be carefree. It's not. It's interesting, I was reading in Corinthians as well, Paul's second letter to the Corinthians. He's talking about following Christ and being his disciple and, you know, what are you willing to give up to be a Christian or to be a leader in church? And even back then, 2,000 years ago, he says, at least we, meaning his group of spiritual leaders, at least we do not go around hawking the word of God for profit, as many do. And I think of the televangelists today who, you know, have these huge ministries, and yes, much of what they're sharing is a benefit spiritually to people, but to just be trying to get people's money to build their mansions, to build, you know, pay for their limos and everything, it's not doing what Christ called us to do. And I think about Millie, and I think how she gives so tirelessly. And, you know, I worked at the Reader. She worked at the Union Tribune for 30 years? 25. You know, full time at the Union Tribune, and then she would teach classes on Monday nights and Tuesday nights, here on Wednesday nights, another class on Thursday nights, and then at church on Sunday mornings. And you know what? We don't make her rich with that little bit of money we put in that little pouch when we pass it every Wednesday night. But she isn't here doing it for the money. She is rich, and she has faith that God is going to meet her basic needs. She doesn't try and stockpile anything here on earth because she knows she can't take it with her. I can't take it with me. In Proverbs it says, what we should do is ask, give me neither poverty nor riches, but give me only my daily bread. Otherwise, if I have too much, I might disown you, God. I might say, hey, kind of like the man this friend Mary, you know, I have all this wealth. Who needs God? I achieved this all by myself. Well, no, mister, you really didn't, and it could be taken away in an instant. But if we don't have enough to meet our daily needs as well, then we may be driven to do something like steal or, you know, something else breaking our moral code. So we want enough to meet our needs, and then we want to get on with the business of living our godly lives. Lastly, with money, there's always this topic of giving. Well, my friend Sandy gave me the shirt off her back. And, you know, last year at Christmas time, we all watched in horror as the tsunamis occurred on the other side of the world, and many of us wrote checks and put it on our credit card, and then the hurricanes happened, and now the earthquakes have happened in Pakistan, and those people over there are getting ready to freeze to death, and people are not opening their wallets this time. And so in the media, there's all this discussion about donor fatigue. Yeah, you know, we're fatigued. Well, and rightly so. I mean, a lot of us have written checks and given what we can, and there's plenty of other causes right here close to home that we need to care for. But again, in Proverbs, it says, generosity, not stinginess, leads to having more money. And again, it's taking that leap of faith that if you take something out of your wallet and hand it over, trust that God is going to be there and continue to meet your needs, continue to give you everything you need. And then the second verse right after that, it says, generosity often leads to the giver being spiritually refreshed. Well, I don't know about you, but when I'm in the business world Monday through Friday, I can use that little spiritual refreshment. I work with sales reps who are driven by money. That's their motivator. You know, they don't get a guarantee. They get a commission, and money and jockeying to beat out somebody else in the company is, that's the mantra I hear 40 hours a week. And so if I can give something to somebody, whether it's a homeless person on the street and I hand them some money or hand them half of the sandwich for my lunch or whatever, knowing that I then get to go back to that spiritual place and realize that simple act of generosity is what God wants us to do, I get that little spiritual refreshment. I know that I'm more than a material-seeking person. I'm also a spiritual person. And the last little proverb I'm going to share tonight is, wisdom yields better fruit than money. So if you exercise developing your wisdom, you will be richly rewarded. Money, at the end, will leave you empty. It will. And so my prayer for all of us is that all of you have the wisdom to know God, that all of you appreciate the riches and the blessings you truly have. And I thank you for this time. Thank you.
I think that was just grand. And you know, what, she must have read my mind or the angel talked to her or whatever, but I was just thinking, if I won the lottery, what would I change? I would never want to miss coming here. I love coming in here, looking at all these people that I love, and if you give me a chance, I don't know yet, but give me a chance, I'm going to love you kids. Why would I ever want to miss that? And watching Devlin make her success, slowly growing in her success. And, you know, what am I going to say? Even if I won the lottery. Or Sunday church, I sit there on Sunday and I just look out and we have the most beautiful people coming there on Sunday. And the new people come and they come up to me afterwards and they say, they walk in the door and they can feel the love. Why would I ever want to miss that? Even if I won the lottery. What do you say, Spencer? But I know what a lot of places I could put that. And I'd have fun doing that. But I wouldn't want to change. And I've been standing here every Wednesday night since, if Acacia knew and didn't know that, in 79. And Sunday church in 69. Why would I change my classes? I love my classes. Why would I ever want to not be there? So go ahead and think what she told us up here had a lot of merit. What would you change if you won the lottery? Well, you think, oh, well, I'd take a trip around the world. Let me tell you, that's not all that's cracked up to be. Just travel around the world is not what just cracked up to be. But I know a lot of places I'd like to give it to some people to make their life easier. That would be joy. But I guess I have to buy a ticket to win, huh? The talk was very, very good. I think it gave us all a lot to think about, don't you? Don't you agree? And you presented it so well, honey. Very, very good.